Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So good to have you back with us. I am back ensconced here in my mom's basement. No, actually, it's my own basement. Doing the podcast after a long road trip up to Montana, where I traveled with Pastor Bob Enyart, and we had an opportunity to go to the Museum of the Rockies there in Bozeman, Montana, to find out that the greatest archaeological discovery in our lifetime is hidden in a dark corner there at the Museum of the Rockies. It is the fossilized dinosaur bone from which was extracted soft tissue, collagen, other such things. And while the greater part of the archaeological discovery has been shuffled off to the Smithsonian, if you manage to take a wrong turn in the darkest corner of the, I think they call it the Hall of Giants, the room with all the dinosaur bones. If you happen to take a wrong turn into the darkest, deepest corner of that room, you will see the dinosaur bone from which was extracted soft tissue, the greatest archaeological discovery of our time, hidden there by Jack Horner and his ilk. Anyway, we had a good time. We stopped off at the Little Bighorn battlefield as well. Got to stand there on the hill where Custer made his last stand. Anyway, it was a great trip. About 30 hours of driving in the car, for which most of the time Pastor Enyart had no cell service. It was his T-Mobile service was pretty embarrassing on that trip. We had to keep grabbing my Verizon phone. To get, no, I'm not advertising for T-Mobile. Yeah, or Verizon. Yeah, you're right. Never mind. We didn't spend a whole lot of...
Sponsor, right?
I don't have any sponsors, and I'm certain Verizon would not sponsor the broadcast if they were given the opportunity. So we didn't spend a whole lot of time on the phone. We spent most of the time going through various creation evolution books, papers, Walt Brown's In the Beginning. A highly recommended read, by the way. We have to figure out when our eldest daughter, Nicole, will be old enough to use that book as part of her curriculum. And I think it'll be when she's about 35. It's a complicated book. But I have a much better understanding of it. And I appreciate Pastor Bob taking the time to explain it all to me. That and a myriad other topics were covered. World problems were nearly solved. Many, many world problems were nearly solved. But we came away with a much better understanding of the state of things. And speaking of the state of things, we're going to open this broadcast with another rapper. I don't think we've had two consecutive broadcasts with a rapper at all, let alone opening with a rapper, because I'm not a big rap fan. We don't have any rap albums, do we? No rap albums at the McBurney compound, but I've... got a story here. So those of you who are hoping to get some hip-hop bumpers, it's just not going to happen.
I did have a
request for something like jazz. Let's see, from Paul. Now, Paul sent me an email about fiat currency that I cannot address on today's show because it's too complicated. I may mention it in passing with a couple of the stories today. But the whole idea of governments simply producing money out of nothing... had a long conversation with Pastor Bob about that. And I've got to do some thinking on it is all. It's all very complicated. So the one thing we do agree on is that the government, the American government, is completely out of control with their printing of money. We certainly agreed on that. But I've got to do some thinking about the whole fiat currency, fractional banking, and the beast from Treasure Island. Was it Treasure Island? No, it's Paris Island. No. The beast from, the Federal Reserve. I forget what island it was. It wasn't Paris Island. I don't think it was Treasure Island. Anyway, we will address that in a later broadcast. Maybe this week on Bob's show is a possibility. We may get into that if we just want to upset more of our audience. We'll talk about fiat currency. But let's start out. This is from CNN. A 9-year-old rapper named Louis Rivera Jr., whose stage name is Lil Poopy. His stage name is Lil Poopy. He's been seen in videos posted online on YouTube, smacking a woman's backside, flashing wads of cash, riding in a Ferrari, and rapping about how, quote, coke is not a bad word, unquote. That's Lil Poopy. He's 9. The Brockton, Massachusetts Police Department, according to CNN, contacted the state's Department of Children and Families after receiving a call from a concerned citizen who saw the boy in videos featuring, stuff I can't really talk about, including drug references and women in various states of undress and whatnot. The state agency is called whenever there is a suspicion of physical, mental, or emotional abuse of a child. That's the State Department of Children and Families there in Massachusetts. Concerned citizen called them. Lil Poopy, according to CNN, is a member of the Moroccan-born rapper French Montana, French Montana's group. You're familiar with Moroccan rapper French Montana, dear? No? We're not going to have any French Montana bumpers? Anyway, the group that Lil Poopy... did I say Lil Poopy? I meant Lil Poopy.
What's the difference?
Lil is L-I-L. Oh. That's the hip-hop way to say little. You know what I say? Lil Poopy. He's a member of Montana's group, the Coke Boys. Now, Lil Poopy's father, Lewis, says his son is, quote, not doing anything wrong, unquote. And he plans on talking to a lawyer. No court orders are in place and no criminal charges have been filed. And I believe that is because the governing officials involved realize that they're all a bunch of deviant perverts. And it would be rather hypocritical of them to bring charges against Lil Poopy or his father for being sexual deviants, because that's what they all are. So that case remains unsolved, as they say. All right. So we'll leave the hip-hop world aside, and we'll move on to an ABC News story. Reason number 671 to keep your children out of the government schools. We go to Chicago, ABC. Chicago public school students, according to ABC, get their sex education in the fifth grade, as do most children in the United States. So that opening statement right there is shocking to me, that you've got teachers, which are mostly deviants and perverts, mostly, who are educating children about things of which they should not speak when a child is in fifth grade, frankly. But the big story that shocks the secular world is that Chicago Public Schools wants to change the age at which they begin sex education. They want to start not at fifth grade, but at the age of 5. Now, parents are uncomfortable with the new policy. Some parents are uncomfortable, so Chicago Public Schools has said they will be able to opt out of sex education for your 5-year-old. They do say there at Chicago Public Schools that the sex ed curriculum will conform to each age group. You know, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds. They have a curriculum appropriate, age-appropriate curricula for the children into whom their hooks are there. For example, kindergartners through third graders will learn about their anatomy, all living things that reproduce, and appropriate and inappropriate touching. The last thing I want a government school educator talking to my child about is inappropriate touching. Excuse me. Fourth graders will focus on puberty and AIDS. Fourth graders. And it's not until after fifth grade that teachers will lead discussions about human reproduction, contraception, and maybe abstinence. Well, they say abstinence, but I say maybe abstinence. Anyway. The proposed policy follows the National Sexuality Education Standards put together by four health education organizations. A bunch of bureaucrat perverts who put together National Sexuality Education Standards. The fact that we have National Sexuality Education Standards. Reason number 672, not to let them get their hooks into your kid there at the government school. Thank you very much. If you put your child into a government school, you are sinning against God and against your child, and you will be held to account in this life or in the next. So fair warning, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Now, we move on from that bunch of perverts to another pervert, Morrissey. Are we familiar with Morrissey? He's a singer. He's 53 years old, and he apparently was a lead singer of a band called The Smiths. Now, the one thing I remember about The Smiths...
They stink.
You say they stink? I just remember anyone who had a Smiths cassette in their car always struck me as some kind of homo. So, only a homo had a Smiths cassette in his car. Although that's too broad of a statement. I'm sorry if I've offended any Smith or Morrissey fans out there. But Morrissey has made some claims in an interview with an online magazine. He was doing an interview with this online magazine for teenage girls, Morrissey was. He was discussing war as just a generic concept. And he suggested if there were more gay men, there would be fewer wars.
Huh?
Yeah, Morrissey says there'd be fewer wars, he says. I know. Well, he says war, I thought, was the most negative aspect of male heterosexuality. If more men were homosexual, there would be no wars, because homosexual men would never kill other men, whereas heterosexual men love killing other men. Unquote. That's Morrissey. The wisdom of Morrissey. He should go talk to, who was the fashion designer? Do you remember the fashion designer? Big story. Fashion designer killed by a crazed, homicidal, homosexual. I can't remember his name. Versace. Yeah, he should talk to Versace about how homosexual men would never kill other men. He could talk to Versace. He could talk to half the members of the Third Reich, as a matter of fact, about that. Let's see. Morrissey says wars and armies and nuclear weapons are essentially heterosexual hobbies, unquote. He also made some anti-meat comments. He's against meat as well. Let's see. Morrissey is no stranger to controversy, according to, who is this? The Independent over there in London. Forget the controversy surrounding the fact about what he does to other men. I mean, that in and of itself is enough of a controversy for me. But that's not really a controversy for the folks at the Independent there in the United Kingdom, where I feel like 40% of all adult males are deviant perverts at this point, at this late point in British history. Let's see. He has called the Chinese a subspecies for their treatment of animals. And he claimed that the 2011 massacre of 97 people in Norway was, quote, nothing compared to what happens at McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken every day. That's Morrissey's.
Obviously don't know any history.
Yeah.
Of ancient Rome, huh?
He doesn't know the history of ancient Rome and the Spartans and all of that stuff. Just disgusting. Okay, we're going to take a short break so I can take a shower after reading that Morrissey story. No. That is just bad. She's not gonna stop at that. Oh no. Yeah, that is wholly inappropriate bumper music on the heels of a Morrissey story, please. Alright, now. Let's go to CBS in Detroit from the Science, really? File. New study. Researchers say that if you compare homosexual couples with different sex married people, that's what they call married people now. Oh. Different sex married people.
Okay,
that's us.
Weird.
We used to just be married people, but now we're different sex married people. If you compare the two, the same sex people have worse health. No matter which risk group you talk about, according to these researchers, they say that the odds of homosexual men living together reporting poor health was 61% higher than their married male counterparts. And for lesbians, it was 46%, whatever. Anyway, they just generally are in ill health. And so naturally, a study has been done to figure out what exactly is going on, and the Detroit CBS reports. What's the takeaway? Well, it's not whether someone is homosexual that matters, according to researchers. It's whether they're married. Married people report better health overall. So the conclusion of these genius researchers? Legalization of same-sex marriage may promote the health of homosexual couples. So if we just grant them marriage, their health will improve, obviously. The lead researcher and her colleagues analyzed the health of nearly 700,000 participants from 97 to 2009 through national health interview surveys. About 3,300 men and women were identified as deviant cohabitors, according to the article. The poor health crossed all spectrums, including socioeconomic status, race, sex, education, income, and the state of their insurance. So they just generally had poorer health. The homos did. The lead researcher said the bottom line is that marriage promotes health. She says, quote, if marriage can promote health, then it's reasonable for us to expect that if we allow homosexual couples to get married, they may get the benefits associated with marriage regarding their health. They'll get healthier. She said that out gay people who cohabitate may be experiencing extra stress from discrimination. And that's what's resulting in the health impact. The poor health isn't a result of them disgracing and defiling their bodies with unnatural deviant acts. It's obviously the stress from all that discrimination from the different sex married couples.
You're getting stressed.
I'm getting stressed just reading about this. So this is the state of research, ladies and gentlemen. Around the world, and specifically here in America, you've got researchers who take a fairly obvious problem, and they study it out, and they guarantee themselves a continuing grant by saying that deviant behavior is normal, and that if we would just normalize it, everything would be okay. Because if they said what was really true and obvious to everyone, they'd be drummed out of academia, and they'd be, I don't know, standing at the corner off the freeway with a sign saying, we'll research for food. Yeah, you can't speak the truth in scientific research anymore when it comes to studying the social mores of the deviants who are taking over society. You simply cannot speak the truth. All right. Now, meanwhile, while here in the West, we are considering problems around homosexual marriage, sex ed for five-year-olds, the opinion of a homosexual singer. Meanwhile, in the background, this is from the New York Times, an Iranian boat seized off the Yemeni coast was carrying sophisticated Chinese anti-aircraft missiles, a development that could signal an escalation of Iran's support to its Middle Eastern proxies. Among the items seized on the boat were 10 Chinese heat-seeking anti-aircraft missiles, obviously built by heterosexual same-sex married couples there in China and being instituted by the same-sex couples in Iran, and Saudi Arabia, Iraq. Is there anybody I missed? Just everyone in the Arabian Peninsula there. The Times says that the presence of these missiles and the seized contraband complicates an already politically delicate case, that of China supplying the enemies of everything good and righteous with heat-seeking missiles. That's a pretty delicate situation. The Times says that the situation has presented the Obama administration with a fresh example of Iran's apparent transfer of modern missiles from China to insurgents in the various Arab Spring conflicts. It's a delicate situation, but worry not. We have Barry Ho at the helm. We have his new Secretary of State. What's his name? John Kerry. And I think now we've got another communist anti-Semite who's been elevated. I can't remember which one it was this week. It was so funny. I've got to think of the guy's name. John Brennan, was it? Well, let's see. There's John Brennan, and there's John Kerry, and then there's another one. I can't remember. Can't remember his name. But there's a troika of anti-Semitic, anti-American, deviant scum who Obama is attempting to elevate into the highest positions of our intelligence and military apparatus. Their names escape me, but you know who they are. Anyway, it was hilarious this week. I had an opportunity to listen to Glenn Beck on the radio, which I don't have as much opportunity as I used to, because it turns my stomach to listen to the man anymore. But he was doing his latest favorite savior politician, Rand Paul. And Rand Paul voted for one of these three. I forget if it was Kerry or Brennan or the other one whose name escapes me. Chuck Hagel. There you go. Thank you, my dear. Executing your co-pilot duties. Thank you. Sorry. Chuck Hagel. Yeah. So anyway, Rand Paul voted for the guy. And Glenn Beck's having a conniption. I can't believe it. And but at the end of the discussion, Glenn Beck came to the realization that Rand Paul's vote for Chuck Hagel, Rand Paul's vote to destroy America, was based on principle, and that's what we need, is principled men. At which point I thought Glenn's sidekick was going to strangle him on the air. I mean, he was freaking out. It was classic radio. Anyway, there could be a breakup there.
Yeah, that's good.
yeah, he was, I forget his sidekick's name, the guy with the funny Al Gore impression.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, he's very upset. Yeah, they could.
I'm upset.
Yeah, one of them could end up leaving the Mormon Church over the whole thing.
Well,
be quite the breakup there at the Glenn Beck program. Anyway, we wish Glenn and Biff or whatever his sidekick's name. We wish him all the best. And you know, you're gonna hitch your wagon to Rand Paul. Good luck with that, guys. All right. Now, from the science, really, file. As opposed to the science, really, file. This is the science, really, file. A study of 40,000 adults over 10 years has found that those with low expectations for a satisfying future actually lead healthier lives. In contrast with people who are overly optimistic about the days ahead, they seem to have a greater risk of disability or death within 10 years. So are you happy? Are you an optimist? Well, I'm just saying that now, I've already discussed the reliability of research. So this research into pessimism, you can take it or leave it for whatever it's worth. This extraordinary research, according to the Telegraph, they say this research will no doubt prove a comfort to anyone with a tendency toward grumpiness, which that defines me. I'm a pessimist, and I'm generally grumpy and in a lousy mood. And so I should live to a ripe old age. The research is based on data collected between 93 and 03. 40,000 respondents were asked how satisfied they believed they would be in 5 years. And then they were interviewed again 5 years later, and their satisfaction levels were compared with their own predictions. Those who overestimated how happy they would be were found to have about a 10% increase in reporting disabilities and a 10% higher risk of flat-out death. I mean, you went back 5 years later, and a lot of these optimists, they were dead. Older people who tended to have a darker outlook on the future were shown to be the most accurate in their predictions. With optimistic youngsters overestimating their success. One of the researchers, one Dr. Lang, said, quote, unexpectedly, we also found that stable and good health and income were associated with expecting a greater decline compared with those in poor health or with low income. So the research basically says, if you want to be at least reasonably content, just settle for socialism. You let the government take care of you. Just don't have high expectations. Don't get your hopes up. Yeah. You know, this research is basically preparing us for the new normal, yeah, in which the government will determine our level of success and have a great bearing on our level of overall happiness and contentment. Research published last year found most people are now living 6 years longer than current life expectancy projections, with no sign of an upper age limit. So we're all just going to get older and grumpier. I mean, those of us in good health. Previous studies have suggested that unrealistic optimism about the future can help people feel better while facing inevitable negative outcomes, such as a terminal disease. So if you've been diagnosed with a terminal disease, that's the time to get optimistic, because it might help. So, well, there you go. From the Science Really file. I'm not sure that was even worth quoting, but I think I just wanted to prepare you for what's at hand. Let's see here. Let's go to Poland. This is from the Associated Press. Lech Walesa. You remember him? Lech Walesa? The Polish democracy icon is what they call him. He's a democracy icon. He's also a Nobel Peace Prize winner. Well, he has sparked outrage queers. He's just sick of them. He wishes they'd shut up. He says homosexuals have no right to a prominent role in politics. Let's see here. Some commentators are now suggesting that Lech Walesa has irreparably harmed his legacy. Yeah, he brought out of the chains of bondage and slavery into liberty and freedom, but he says he's really just tired of the queers speaking all the time and insisting that they should run the government. And so now they say he may have irreparably harmed his legacy. Walesa said in a television interview last Friday that he believes homosexuals have no right to sit on the front benches in parliament. Well, I mean, there's a number of reasons one could. Well, let's not even go there. I would think the backbenchers might even be more of a problem. But anyway, let's leave that aside. He says that if homosexuals are representative at all in the government, they should sit in the back. And he said maybe they should even sit behind a wall, said Lech Walesa, the man who brought Poland out of the chains of slavery of the Soviet Union. He says a minority should not impose itself on the majority, and his words have enraged many. And the lisping is noticeable. I'm sure it's like the sound of escaping gas is rising there in Poland as the lisping class mutters under their breath and plot Lech Walesa's destruction. There in Poland, they have a national committee devoted to fighting hate speech and other crimes. Okay, so hate speech and other crimes. They filed a complaint with prosecutors in Gdansk. They want Walesa arrested. So, yeah, and that's his home city. They've accused him of promoting propaganda of hate against a sexual minority. And they want Lech to be arrested and thrown in prison for just saying, look, I'm just tired of the queers. Lech didn't even come out and speak the whole truth and say that, look, for 5,000 years, homosexuality and adultery were classified as crimes in Poland and in civilizations throughout the world. It's criminal behavior. Not only should they not be involved in the government, if they come up here and they sit on the front bench and declare that they're open homosexuals, they should be arrested for being criminals. But he didn't even go that far. He just said, I wish they'd shut up. And I don't think they should run the government. I don't think they should have positions of prominence and authority in the Polish government. And for that, Lech Walesa will go down in history not as a leader who freed millions of people, he'll go down as a hate monger. If the lisping class is allowed to continue taking over as they have been. One leading television journalist in Poland said Lech Walesa has disgraced the Nobel Prize. And she made no mention of PLO leader Yasser Arafat and his Nobel Prize. No. Didn't bring that up.
Obama did
win a Nobel Prize, yes. But I don't think it was for... let me think here. I don't know what it was for. But there was no reference made to the other disgusting, foul, vile leaders who've killed and murdered and butchered people. No mention of them disgracing it, but one little mention that you're just getting kind of tired of the lisping class. And, well, forget about it, Lech Walesa. They're going to tear down your statues. They're going to bulldoze under every monument that was ever made to the man who freed his people. And instead, he'll probably be tried, executed, and his grave will be covered with a lavender triangle so that people can remember his disgraced place in history. It's just kind of scary, ladies and gentlemen. That's all. I'm just saying, when you think about Lech Walesa and what he did and what he represented, the fact that he might just be tired of the lisping class, it doesn't rate very high on the shock meter here at the McBurney compound. All right, so from Lech Walesa, let's go to a lesser-known political leader. He's a councillor, a city councillor, quite often referred to here at the Worldview as a student councillor. There in Cornwall. Cornwall being somewhere in the United Kingdom, from what we understand. The city councillor, Colin Brewer, last week had to apologize. He made some comments that were quite inappropriate. He made remarks to a disabilities charity at an event designed to allow the student counselors to meet equal opportunity organizations and understand the issues that disabled people and the organizations who advocate for them help the city council understand the issues they face. Well, Mr. Brewer reportedly approached a booth run by a charity called Disability Cornwall, and he was told about the work that the charity was doing. He responded by saying, quote, "Disabled children cost the council too much money, and they should be put down," unquote. He said that about disabled people. Yeah, he said they should be put down. Well, he's apologized, and apparently he has resigned. Yeah, he had initially refused to resign, saying that his comments were just a flippant remark. You know, a flippant remark about killing disabled children. He has since reconsidered his position. He has resigned. He was asked by BBC whether those offended by his comments would be pleased with his decision to resign. He said, "I know they will be." He said, though, he had received messages of support from at least half a dozen other student counselors who contacted him over his remarks. He says, "I was wrong. I admit it. I will continue to apologize." And in the midst of all this, about a dozen other student counselors supported him in his comments about killing disabled children. So in a rational world, Mr. Colin Brewer, student counselor there in Cornwall, he would be arrested for saying that you should execute or kill disabled children, especially since he's in a position of authority in the government. He'd be impeached, thrown in prison, and tried, and definitely given a mental health check. But in the world in which we live, this brave new world, Counselor Brewer has resigned. He's apologized in spite of the support of at least a dozen other student council members. Well, if it was up to me. But it's not up to me. But if it was up to me. If it was up to me. Anyone who advocated for the putting down of the disabled wouldn't be coming at anybody live because he'd be executed, frankly. That's a crime against humanity for a governing official to even utter such a thought, in my humble opinion. But that's standard fare, at least there in, where was that? Cornwall. The former Great Britain, formerly great, that is. All right, now let's go to the personhood file. I have a rant that I would like to read from a clenched-jawed, clipped-haired supporter of, she's a supporter of in vitro fertilization, allegedly. She has a blog called theinfertilityvoice.com, and her blog this past week was called The Pro-Life, Pro-Family Agenda of Personhood Legislation is a Lie. It's a lie, she says. She says, personhood legislation is anything but pro-life or pro-family. Personhood legislation isn't about God or miracles. And for God, she does the capital G-D, which means she has so much respect for God, she won't even write his name. Oh. Yeah, it's a very self-righteous thing that people do. Really? So, yeah, if you have someone who writes to you and they write G-D, generally, you could consider them mentally deranged, generally speaking. Yeah. So she says it has nothing to do with G-D or miracles or precious little babies waiting to be born. Personhood legislation seeks to undermine and overturn women's legally granted rights to govern their own reproductive health. Ah! So I can just see her. She's pulling out her hair, blood vessels bulging out of her neck and her forehead.
These are our legally granted rights.
Rights are not legally granted, young lady. Rights are endowed by God to every human person. And the fact that the government, the Supreme Court, allegedly granted the right of women and men and families to kill their children, well, that may have been a legally granted right, but it's immoral, and it's not actually a right. She says, personhood legislation doesn't promote family values. It prevents families. It prevents people like me and you who read my blog and the 7.3 million other people in this country whose reproductive organs biologically reject the traditional way in which babies should be made from being able to have families of our own on our own terms. It prevents these babies from ever being conceived in the first place. Angry. By trying to grant personhood status to embryos and even eggs, personhood advocates dehumanize infertility patients and practitioners. Now, she says, I'm calling out the personhood movement on their great big lie. Personhood advocates seek to champion life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all pre-born Americans. Well, guess what? That's a lie. What they're really trying to peddle is the notion that all people's rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are equal, but some people's rights are more equal than others. She's talking about the eggs, those eggs rights. She says, namely, the rights of the pre-born. The rights of the pre-born, these personhood advocates say that those rights are more important than the rights of 7.3 million very real, breathing, walking, talking Americans now suffering with infertility. So do you notice what just happened here in this blog, which, by the way, she wrote it, so it's not like we can't read it and analyze it. She wrote it, and she says that the rights of the preborn take precedent, according to personhood advocates, over the rights of 7.3 million very real, breathing, walking, talking Americans. So she calls people who've been born, who've had the privilege of birth, very real, breathing, walking, and talking, where unborn children she refers to as embryos and even eggs. Now, who's dehumanizing who, young lady? I think thou dost
protest too much. She goes on to say, to support personhood is to deny me and 7.3 million other Americans medical treatment to which we are entitled. You're not entitled to anything. None of us are entitled to anything, especially when it comes to having children or medical treatment. No one's entitled to anything, you communist, socialist scum. And by the way, she says that Personhood USA and the other personhood advocates, they say they seek to champion life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all preborn Americans. Actually, I think they'd be happy with just life. All right, we'll leave liberty and the pursuit of happiness aside until we secure the right to life of all those unborn children. That's all. So she wants the medical treatment to which she's entitled. She says, don't just sit there and be horrified. Do something! Fight like the family you so desperately want and are entitled to depends on it. Get that family on your terms! And if you have to kill and dispose of 50 or 60 embryos, fine! I'm entitled! Anyway, I just want to make it known that as a personhood advocate, I am also an advocate of ethical in vitro fertilization. I think it can be done ethically, and I encourage people, if they have an issue with infertility, to seek fertility treatment. And in vitro fertilization is one of the options you may choose to pursue. But I would just strongly suggest that you make sure that the medical professionals with which you interact are held to the same ethical standard as anyone else in the medical industry. And that's the Hippocratic Oath, which starts with first do no harm. That's all. And it can be done. The reinstitution of the right of personhood of all people, no matter how small or innocent or helpless, well, that will dramatically change the in vitro fertilization industry. There's no doubt about that. But they simply won't be allowed to create and destroy and kill lots of people. They will be allowed to create and do their best to preserve the lives of countless children. And they should be able to do that. But they shouldn't be able to just discard and throw away and kill embryos that don't make the cut. And it can be done, ladies and gentlemen. Every other branch of medicine has to abide by ethical principle. Well, except of course the abortion industry. The whole point there is killing children. But that's really not part of the medical industry, is it? It's really not. So anyway, by the way, her name is Keiko Zoll.
Keiko,
she's Japanese apparently. She added to her blog the next day or in the following days. She says, some folks have expressed concern that I'm passing judgment on people who are pro-life or conservative. Let me clarify, I'm not. I'm merely stating the known fact that personhood legislation is being orchestrated by a very vocal, very well-funded arm of the pro-life conservative movement. This is not a judgment. This is just a statement of fact. Don't just sit there and be horrified. Do something! So she says personhood supporters want to deny her rights, but she's not judging in any way. Please don't confuse Keiko with someone who judges. Keiko Zoll. K-E-I-K-O-Z-O-L-L. You could look her up, and maybe you could send her a link to this show, and she could give me an opinion of how closely I resemble her actual ranting and screeching and raving about in vitro fertilization. Get out of here, Keiko. All right. Let's see. From the Road to Hell file.
Oh, that's a new one.
Yeah. The Road to Hell file. Senior citizens, this is according to the New York Post, senior citizens are catching venereal disease at record rates. The number of 50, 60, and 70-year-olds getting chlamydia, syphilis, and gonorrhea has doubled in the past decade. That's it. That's the whole story. That's just on the Road to Hell file. That hasn't helped, those pills. Yeah, that hasn't helped, that whole scene. Anyway, so when I was younger, and I thought of older people, I often thought of my grandmother. She was the quintessential old person to me. She was a former nun. She had 6 kids. She was friendly, and she cooked, and that's what I remember about old people. When I went to Grandma's house, I never had to worry about being led astray in some sexually deviant manner. Neither did anyone else visiting my grandmother's house or any of the other grandmothers and grandfathers who lived on their block. But that's no longer true, ladies and gentlemen. The 60 and 70-somethings are the hippies from the 60s, for crying out loud. I mean, that's scary to think of what Grandma and Grandpa have become in so many places, in so many neighborhoods around the country. Grandma and Grandpa just ain't what it used to be. That's all I had for that. All right, now from the engineering, really, file, from the Guardian in London, an Australian billionaire has unveiled blueprints. An Australian billionaire has unveiled blueprints for a successor ship. Okay. I'm going to try and spit this story out whether you want to hear it or not. He's unveiled blueprints for a new Titanic is what I'm trying to get at. That's what I'm trying to say. Mining tycoon Clive Palmer said his ambitious plans to launch a copy of the Titanic and sail her across the Atlantic will be a tribute to those who built and backed the original ship. He says, "We will complete the journey. We will sail into New York on the ship they designed." And he's going to build an exact replica of the Titanic, except I don't think it's going to be run on steam. I doubt it anyway. It'll probably have diesel engines. But Palmer has refused to be drawn into predicting that his new boat would be unsinkable. So he's not falling for that one again. You remember, they said that the Titanic was the unsinkable ship. And then it sunk, and that was very embarrassing for everyone involved. Not to mention the tragedy for those who were aboard the ship. He says, anything will sink if you put a hole in it, he says.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, so the guy's a billionaire. He's obviously no dummy. Anything will sink if you put a hole in it. But listen to this. He thinks that due to global warming, the risks of traveling through the waters of the North Atlantic near the Arctic Circle have lessened considerably. Yeah, okay. So I guess you can still fall for fairy tales, even if you're a billionaire. Although, you know what, I have no doubt that the water might be warmer there and there might be fewer icebergs. I believe that's an undisputed fact. So he may be right that this is the time to make that during this warming period that we've experienced, slight warming. And so there you go, he's going to do it. He says that the Titanic 2, I'm sorry, he didn't say this, the Guardian newspaper says that the Titanic 2 is set for launch in 2016, and already 40,000 applications have been submitted to be a part of the maiden voyage. People want to get a ticket on the Titanic 2. I would just say, why not just stay in Europe? You're already on the Titanic 2. You don't even have to leave the continent. The whole thing's going to sink. Just stay where you are. Anyway. They go on to lament the fact that this guy is so rich. He has 100 cars, 150 racehorses, 5 private jets, and a large collection of dinosaur fossils. Yeah. And the newspapers in Europe, they just report that because it enrages the average socialist citizen there in Europe. And they get upset that this guy's got 100 vintage cars. Well, God bless him. I'm glad he's got 100 vintage cars. I hope he does some good with his money. That's all. All right. Now, what do I have here? I have so many notes written on this article, I'm not even sure I can read it. This is from the politicalticker.com, which I think is a CNN product. Anyway, it's Mayor Michael Bloomberg over in New York. Let's see here. The Political Ticker reports that a bevy of steep spending cuts have hit the federal government. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We've gone over the fiscal cliff. We've finally done it. And a bevy of steep spending cuts have hit the federal government. But Michael Bloomberg says, please don't worry. And the folks at Political Ticker say, let us turn for solace in this dark and scary time to New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. He was asked about this sequestration, what kind of impact this is going to have on the inhabitants of Gotham there. And he said, quote, New York City gets 10 or 12% of our budget from the federal government. Not all of that is going to be cut back, but there would be effects, and they will not be good effects. But in the context of, is anything going to change tomorrow? Are we going to run out of money tomorrow? I'm sure I'll get that question at the next press conference, and the answer is no. We are spending money we don't have. It's not like your household, though. In your household, people are saying, oh, you can't spend money you don't have. Well, that's true for your household because nobody is going to lend you an infinite amount of money. When it comes to the United States federal government, people do seem willing to lend us an infinite amount of money. Now, our debt is so big and so many people own it that it's preposterous to think that they would stop selling us more. It's the old story. Ha ha ha. If you owe the bank $50,000, you've got a problem. But if you owe the bank $50 million, the bank has a problem. Ha 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 ha. And that's a problem for the lenders. They can't stop lending us more money. Unquote. Oh, Michael Bloomberg. When it was suggested that cutting waste could solve a significant portion of the deficit, Mr. Bloomberg disagreed. He said, again, and I think we were rolling tape, quote, listen, I've worked now in government for 11 years. One of the problems is the definition of waste. You think the programs I want are waste. I think the programs you want are waste. It's not like somebody is taking wheelbarrows full of dollars and throwing them out the window. It's a question of the definition of what is waste and what is not. Everything we have was put in by Congress. It was signed by the president. There was a reason and a constituency for it. Most of the tax breaks are designed to encourage or discourage economic activity. There's a reason for it. Unquote, said Michael Bloomberg. So to me, this is like listening to a member of the Weimar Reichstag in the days before Hitler took over, or maybe a Roman senator in the days immediately prior to the sacking by the Visigoths. Everything is going to be fine. It's far too big to fail. They have to keep lending us more money. By the way, just to address this bevy of steep spending cuts that are about to hit, for fiscal year 2013, not that I like going into numbers, but they're going to cut $45 billion out of a $1.2 trillion budget. So that's less than half of 1% of the projected growth. So they're not even going to cut anything. And so all these socialists who've done the whole gloom and doom dance about sequestration, how it's going to destroy everything, it's going to be funny to watch how they react as the economy continues to sink in the quagmire of socialism and stagger along. But there is no massive collapse, and there's no soup lines and bread lines. Anyway, Michael Bloomberg, all he needed was one of those oak leaf little hat things like Julius Caesar used to wear. Looked like a Roman senator. Put him in a toga. Let the Visigoths have at him. Yeah, he's overly optimistic, so they're to refer back to that study, ladies and gentlemen. He said, everything's going to be fine. 5 years from now, we're going to be so happy. All right. No, we still have time.
No. This is the
Oh, we have to take a break? All right, let's take one more break before we discuss how Honey Boo Boo may spark World War III. We want to cut in on this before the vocals. There we go. All right. Yeah, only the guitar part's really good on that. Really? Yeah, yeah. The vocals are wretched, horrible, singing through his nose. All right. Honey Boo Boo is a reality star on I don't know what network is she on. Does it mention it here? I've got a story here from the Daily Mail in London. So just the fact that the newspapers in the United Kingdom are covering Honey Boo Boo, that's enough to scare you. Anyway, reality star Honey Boo Boo is set to spark World War III, quite possibly, as she sets out on a quest to take over the world of reality television. Her show is set to be syndicated now in Northern Europe, and who knows, if they can pull it off in Europe, they may take her to Asia and even the Middle East. The show, if you're not familiar, which I imagine you're not, the popular show features the antics of the charming 7-year-old welfare conduit, Honey Boo Boo, and her welfare mom, June, and mom's shack-up partner, Honey Boo Boo's dad, Sugar Bear. She has three older welfare conduit sisters who bring in paychecks to mama there. There's a homosexual uncle on the show named Uncle Poodle.
Is it homosexual?
Yeah, they have a homo now on that show. Yeah, I wasn't aware. And the fathers of the other sisters are nowhere to be seen. Nobody knows who they are. Anyway, so if you haven't seen the show, you should at least check it out in the same way you would check out a horrifying car accident. Just... You know, like, you just got to see it. As bad as it is, you need to know. Oh, it's the Discovery Channel. And the VP, an executive VP at the Discovery Channel, who's all excited about the international distribution that's about to take place, says that this is a slice of Americana. He says about Honey Boo Boo. This is a slice of America. Anyway. So, ladies and gentlemen, I know that the World War III reference may take you by surprise, but in the days prior to the attack on Pearl Harbor, certain members of the Japanese militarist class used to watch the newsreels from America, and they would come over there into the theaters of Japan, and these generals and Japanese militarists, they saw the Americans in the newsreels. You know, a little overweight, driving to the beach, slacking off, not doing anything. Undisciplined slackers is what they thought. We could go, you know what? Those Americans, they've gone soft. And so, you know, boom, next thing you know, we're drawn into World War II because the Japanese militarists think we're soft and they bombed Pearl Harbor and we all know what happened. It was an ugly time. Well, can you imagine what's going to happen when Honey Boo Boo ends up in, mix that with the Arab Spring, and when she goes to China and the Chinese militarists start to, they watch Honey Boo Boo with the train going by the house and the fat slackers sitting there with their welfare checks eating ice cream and hot dogs. And it's just a matter of time before the Chinese land troops in California, for crying out loud. They'll think we've all gone soft.
Well, yeah, and the military is definitely gone soft.
You think the military, but not as soft as Honey Boo Boo.
Well,
our military's not that soft, but yeah.
Feminized.
Yeah, so they're going to say, look, they're letting homos in the military. You got Honey Boo Boo is basically a representative of what they'll think America is. And Honey Boo Boo leads directly to World War III. It's scary to think about, ladies and gentlemen. I think we need to start a lobby to stop Honey Boo Boo from being syndicated into China for national security reasons. All right. Now, from one bunch of slackers who are destroying the country, let's move to, that's the Discovery Channel. by asserting that Honey Boo Boo represents America in any way. But I've got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, if you drive through certain neighborhoods and you start to wonder, is America represented adequately by Honey Boo Boo? And I don't think so yet. But we'll have to see what the Chinese think. We've got to keep her out of China. That's all. But from that bunch of slackers to Oregon Democrat Earl Blumenauer, last week he put forward legislation to allow all of the 50 United States to legalize medical marijuana in an effort to end the confusion surrounding federal pot policy.
That's too complicated.
Now, legalizing legalizing marijuana is not going to do anything to end the confusion. Let me attest to that. First of all, Blumenauer's legislation has 13 co-sponsors, by the way, for those who are into numerology, and I am, including GOP Representative Dana Rohrabacher. And this legislation would basically create a framework for the FDA to legalize medicinal marijuana. Medicinal in quotation marks, by the way. I have to put quotation marks around that. Let me do that right now. Because the folks at Politico did not put quotation marks around medicinal. Whenever you put medicinal and marijuana together, you have to put quotation marks. They might not be teaching that in journalism school. This legislation, according to Politico, this is a quote from Blumenauer, the sponsor, trying to clear up the confusion, trying to cut through the fog and the haze. He said, "This legislation gets the federal government and the Department of Justice out of this never-never land that they're in right now." Now, I don't know if they did this on purpose, but just the way the story is written. Now, the activists who were surrounding Blumenauer at his public statement had just come from a four-day conference on medical marijuana, and many of them were dazed and confused. No, many of them were veterans of campaigns to legalize medicinal marijuana. Jimmy Carter came out saying he's okay with legalizing marijuana. Obviously, if marijuana had been legal in 1980, Jimmy Carter may have won a second term. So, obviously, Jimmy Carter's behind it. Political professionals say that Blumenauer's bill is not likely to pass. Yes, it's not likely to pass this time. They say it doesn't have much of a chance of becoming a law this year. But no doubt, the potheads will continue, funded by George Soros and the other forces of darkness hell-bent on destroying your children and the country. And they will no doubt one day, you'll have marijuana at Walgreens. Yeah, right next to the decongestant. Pick up some marijuana there for your illnesses. All right. Now, from the science, really, file. IV drips are the latest rage at day spas, medical spas, yes. You can now go in. There's a growing trend, according to CBS in New York, a growing trend of people who seek out customized intravenous cocktails at wellness centers and spas. The formulas of vitamins and minerals are said to provide instant relief for a number of ailments, including dehydration, sunburn, poor nutrition, extreme activity, and even hangovers. You can now go get an IV at the day spa. It costs about $400 to get yourself hooked up. And I think if you get hooked up to an IV at an ER, it's like $1,500. Yet they're able to do it at the med spa for a mere $400. So I don't know, the next time that you need emergency medical help, it might be better to go to a day spa because you might get a better deal on your IV drip. All right, the Russian meteor. You know what? I'm going to save this story because I don't understand it. We want to know, was the Russian meteor that exploded, was it in any way related to the comet? No, it was another meteor. Anyway, it was another body that drifted by the planet. You remember all that. Well, we don't know if they were connected. I'm going to take this up with Bob, Pastor Bob, on his show this week. We're going to talk about this meteor a little bit more. That's from the Science Really file, because these guys actually plotted the trajectory. Yeah. And now from the Science Really file, from Sao Paulo, Brazil, scientists say that the vast majority of Earth's estimated 13 million species are still unknown, and that to describe them all would take approximately 2,000 years. Yeah. A researcher at the, a professor of ecology at a Sao Paulo university says, we estimate that there are a total of around 13 million species. He says, out of these, roughly 1.75 million have been described. And he says, there's actually no consensus on the exact number of species. Experts rely on extrapolation based on known data. And here's the interesting part. This researcher in Sao Paulo, Brazil, says most species have been discovered by amateur taxonomists in Europe. But he says that's not the case in Brazil and other countries with a high level of biodiversity, where we do not have an army of amateur taxonomists. He says, basically Europe, you know, Europe has been relatively prosperous for 1,000 years. And so people in their spare time go around looking for bugs and animals and bird watching. And we've been identifying all these species. But in these countries that are run by socialists and thugocracies and drug cartels, well, people are scared for their lives just trying to find their next meal. They're not doing a lot of bird watching. They're not out there looking for bugs and identifying and describing various species. He goes on and on about how important it is to describe all of these, and I agree that it would be really cool. Anyway, but well, just the point there is that bad government leads to scientific retardation, frankly. I mean, you got Hugo Chavez down there in one of the most biodiverse places on the planet, and you got a bunch of other drug criminals running the governments of Latin and South America. So we can't identify any new caterpillar species. We might miss the one that cures cancer, for crying out loud. And it's all due to bad government. All right, so I think we're just about out of time. So let me just mention that Iran has a second heavily guarded facility where they are. It's the Arak heavy water production plant. Heavy water is needed to operate a nuclear reactor, and it can't produce plutonium, which could be used to make a bomb. But you know, in the big picture, I'm really optimistic about everything that's going on over there, and I think 5 years from now we're really going to be glad that we didn't bomb Iran. Don't worry. Iran claims that its nuclear facilities are for peaceful use. Never mind. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have even brought that story up. I don't want to give anyone the wrong impression there. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, we turn for some words of wisdom to Dennis Rodman, who I am surprised, frankly, that he's still alive. I did not know that. I thought he had passed away some time ago. Ex-NBA star Dennis Rodman met with North Korea's Kim Dong-un last week. He made a trip there to Pyongyang for a basketball exhibition game in Pyongyang, where people are eating their own children because they're starving to death. Dennis Rodman goes there with some members of the Harlem Globetrotters. Am I living in an alternate universe? Is everyone on LSD? This is bizarre to me. He sat side by side with Kim Dong-un, and he watched an exhibition basketball game, and is reported to have said to Kim Dong-un, "You have a friend for life, Kim," said Dennis Rodman to Kim Dong-un. Kim later invited the Americans to dinner. There was a production crew there from HBO. Yeah, along with Dennis Rodman. There's a shock. He's traveling with camera people from HBO. That's because the daily activities of Dennis Rodman, they can't be broadcast on anything but a station like HBO, which specializes in sexual immorality and immorality in general. Kim invited all of them to dinner. He plied the group with liquor, did Kim. According to the producer there on the HBO crew, he said, "Kim Jong-un just got the whole HBO crew wasted." He tweeted that as people were starving in the streets and being enslaved, murdered, butchered, tortured, and killed. The folks at HBO were having a great time with Kim and the vodka and the hookers and all that. Anyway, That's it, ladies and gentlemen. So don't be pessimistic. Dennis Rodman has things well in hand there in Pyongyang, and things are going to be just fine. And I'll return next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, let me thank my friends from KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, Personage USA, American Right to Life. Is there anyone I missed? Oh, yes, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios, and my extremely attractive audio engineer. I'll be back with you next week, folks. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.